'Tis the season to crown Hollywood's shiniest stars. It's Oscar time, and we're going to chat about it on this edition of Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
Sunday, February 24th marks the 91st Academy Award ceremony presented by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, an evening to honor the art and science of filmmaking. There will be a number of first-time honors for some filmmakers, and to help me explore a few of them is my good friend Lisa Respers-France, senior writer for CNN Entertainment. Welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
And also joining us is Alaysia Williams, a grad student here at Syracuse University, interested in the art of entertainment. Welcome, Alaysia.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Best Picture honorees this year include Black Panther, Black Klansman, Roma, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, A Star is Born, and Vice. There are some interesting first-time nominations associated with these films, or some of these films, and I thought it would be interesting to explore some of those. Up first is Black Panther, which was directed by Ryan Coogler. It's the first comic book movie to get a nod from the Academy.
I'm standing in your house, serving justice to a man who stole your vibranium and murdered your people. Justice your king couldn't deliver.
I don't care that you brought Claw. Only reason I don't kill you where you stand is because I know who you are. Now, what do you want?
I want the throne.
I want the throne, yo. That's one of my favorite scenes from that movie. There's a lot of favorite scenes from that movie. But if you've been under a rock and don't know the story of Black Panther, it is Marvel's latest big blockbuster hit. It's the story of a prince to king moment for T'Challa, who must protect the fictional African nation of Wakanda from those who would exploit its technology and riches for evil. Lisa, was this a surprise nomination for you?
Not at all. You know, the Academy has long dealt with criticism that it doesn't have any kudos for popular films, that it's just all about what the critics enjoy. And Black Panther came along at exactly the right moment. First of all, it was a Marvel film, so how could you not love it? Marvel films already have a built-in audience. But Black Panther wasn't just a movie, it was a movement. I mean, everyone was running around getting dressed up to go see it. It blew the box office away. Wakanda Forever became the thing to say. And it's just such a fun movie to watch. It has a great message. And people of color love seeing themselves on screen. So, but of course, in Hollywood, the most important color is the color green. And Black Panther made so much money. So if you're going to have a film that was exquisitely directed as this movie was, had such an incredible cast as this film did, it just, to me, was a no-brainer that it was going to have to be nominated.
Yeah, it is the kind of film that, including some of the things that you just mentioned, is hard to ignore, almost impossible to ignore. You said it was a movement, and it definitely was. It was a phenomenon, really. So the numbers, $700 million in domestic sales, that's the third highest grossing film domestically, and then $1.3 billion globally. Just a number of outstanding performances from some of the top actors, specifically African-American actors in the business. So it was a hard, I guess I was surprised in that I just didn't think the Academy and critics gave enough kudos to comic book movies. And when we look back, and I wonder if you have to give credit to, if you go back to 2008 and The Dark Knight. Now, there was a lot of controversy around that movie, the Batman movie Dark Knight, which was an exquisite movie. There was controversy that wasn't nominated. And I think shortly after that, the Academy expanded the field from 5 to 10 films that could be nominated. And I wonder if if we can credit sort of the Black Knight as paving the road for a Black Panther to get nominated.
I think that's interesting. I think there's something to that, but I also think that this wasn't just any Marvel movie. We also have to, I believe, give credit to the hashtag #OscarSoWhite movement.
Yes.
This was a film that put diversity at the forefront when it came to Hollywood. You can no longer say, oh, we couldn't find any actors of color for this role, because all the roles, the vast majority of the roles in this film, were for actors of color. They were for Black actors. And so I think hashtag #OscarSoWhite, you know, for years, every time we have Oscar nominations for the past couple of years, there's been a discussion about, you know, the need for diversity. And so this became, you know, almost like the poster child for Hollywood actually getting it right. Because you didn't have to be just a Black person to enjoy this movie. If you were somebody who was in the comic book movies, you liked it. If you liked action films, you liked it. If you liked good acting, you enjoyed it. If you liked technology, if you were, you know, a science person, you enjoyed it. So this movie pretty much had something for everyone, and it also happened to have an incredibly strong message about Blackness and about the importance of Blackness. And so, like I said earlier, I just feel like this was the right movie at the right time, and a culmination of many things brought it together. And absolutely, you know, you make a very valid point that by expanding the opportunities to have more films be nominated, it gave it a better shot.
Yeah, Alaysia, the movie transcends in a way the comic book genre with the phenomenon that it became, and it's probably one of the first, I think the first comic book movie that I can remember that I got extremely emotional watching. I mean, mm-hmm. I actually cried during the movie.
Yeah.
Was that your experience? Was it an emotional viewing for you? And do you think that led to one of the reasons why the Academy chose to pick this up as a nominated film?
Absolutely. I felt like it was a lot of emotion, and it brought out a lot of, as she said, it was diverse. So the culture that was, you know, that they showed in this movie, it really brought out emotions that you couldn't even imagine to feel other than with a movie like this, with the all Black cast, with the Oscars So White thing. It really brought it to the forefront to where you couldn't even ignore it. So it was hard to say it did so great in the box office. How could you not bring it to the Oscars?
Right, right. And we should know, and I think we all know, that box office success doesn't always equate to an Oscar nomination. Mm-hmm. But given the background and the history of the Oscar So White movement, this would be just extremely hard to ignore, not only because of the box office success, but of the quality of the production, mm-hmm. the direction, the acting. So, yeah, I'm not I was pleasantly surprised, let's say, that the film did get a nod. It's also nominated for costume design. It's gorgeous costuming in there, original score and original song, as well as production design and sound editing. The score, Lisa, did really well on the charts, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, the soundtrack, Kendrick Lamar, hottest rapper out there. He curated the soundtrack and worked on it. And I mean, it's one of those things where even if it wasn't a part of the Black Panther movie, the Black Panther experience, it still would be an incredibly tight album. The scoring of the film could stand by itself. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just one of those things where this is a project where you never want to call any type of movie like a perfect project, but this was a film and a project that just hit on so many different levels and aspects of excellence. And so, you know, if you want to call it, you know, Black excellence, Black girl magic, Black boy magic, it was all of those things. And it was a project that everyone could be proud of.
Yeah, it was a significant moment of pride, I think, in our culture when you have, and Lisa mentioned this up front, the number of people that were getting dressed up mm-hmm. in African garb to go see the movie and taking pictures and putting it out on social media. You could just see, Alaysia, the pride that people took in being represented on film like that.
Absolutely. So you would see it all over social media. Even when I remember a time I didn't even know Black Panther was coming out, but you would see people promoting. It was just like the community came together to make sure that we know that we're going to go out and support our people. We're going to go out and make sure this happens for us. And the community came out and did what we were supposed to do. And it was an absolute success.
Yeah, and what you saw, Lisa, in communities around the country where you had fundraisers, mm-hmm. That were promoted and produced by people to collect money to take kids who couldn't afford the movies mm-hmm. to go see that film. This is how important that many people saw this film.
Absolutely. Representation matters. It really matters to the youth. And what it reminded me of is how my grandmother used to tell me back in the 50s and 60s when a Black person would show up on television, the neighbors would run into the house to watch it because it was such an extraordinary moment. And I felt like that's what Black Panther was. We saw ourselves not just on screen, but we saw ourselves in a future that we want to have. You know, this was a world. Wakanda Forever became a catchphrase for a reason because it spoke to this was a world where, you know, there was technological advancements. These were not, you know, step and fetch it type of characters as they used to say back in the day. These were characters where you watch this film and you thought, yes, we want that to be our future. This is the type of Black characters that we want to see portrayed on screen. It was smart, it was funny, and it was incredibly well done.
Yeah, absolutely. And to end on a positive note, as most sort of nominated movies do, they're back into the theater. But for Black History Month, there is a way to see Black Panther in the theater for free in celebration of Black History Month. So I think that's really cool. Moving on to I'm going to ask this question in each section. Do you think it can win, Lisa?
You know, I don't think we're there yet. I think such a big deal has been made of it being nominated. I would love for it to win, but I don't imagine that it's going to happen. And again, because there's so many nominees, there's a lot of tough competition going into it.
Right. I think with the number of nominations that it has, it will win something, but it may not be Best Picture. Moving on to Roma, which was written and directed by Alfonso Cuarón. It takes place in Mexico City in the early 1970s. Cleo is a maid in the household of a middle-class doctor. She takes on increasing responsibility caring for the family's four children during the time of personal and political upheaval. It's essentially the story of Curon's life.
Roma is very personal to me. Much of it is based upon my memory. It's a film about a family, a city, and a country. But ultimately, it's about humanity. I wanted to make a film that was both intimate and universal, a film that speaks to everyone. My hope is that in some way, Roma connects with you and your past, with your memory. And I invite you to share your experience with me and the world.
And that is the filmmaker Alfonso Cuarón. It is not his first nomination. He was nominated for the movie Gravity. This is, however, the first ever Best Picture nomination for the platform Netflix. So I find this to be a very interesting one because while Netflix isn't the first streaming service to be nominated for Best Picture, it is their first, and I think it marks a new era for entertainment in having the small screen compete with theatrical releases. This surprised no one, I think, Lisa, did it?
No, not at all. It's a beautiful film. People have fallen in love with it. And let's be honest, Netflix, they're putting some money behind their projects. They're really getting out there. They want to be a player in Hollywood. And, you know, they want to be known not just as, oh, this is where you go to get old movies and TV shows, but they've invested heavily in their original programming and their original content. And I think what we're seeing are the fruits of that labor.
And do you think this is a sign that the Academy and critics are going to be more receptive and welcoming to small screen films?
Absolutely, because you can't ignore the quality of the content that's coming out. People fell in love with this film for all the reasons that we just heard Jerome say. It is very personal. It's a throwback. It's you feel like you're in Mexico in the early 1970s. And it's just a beautiful story that you can connect with on a multitude of levels. And so I think, yeah, if the quality's there, if the audience is there, and if critics like it, then it's really hard to ignore.
Yeah, Alaysia, it's a beautifully shot film. Have you seen, you've seen clips of it? You've seen some of this film? It's wonderfully shot.
Yeah, it is. And with me being in school right now, as I watched the movie, the way that he depicted the certain parts of the movie, I don't want to be a spoiler because you haven't seen it, but when the dad comes home and they don't show his face for at least 30 seconds to a minute, and it just shows the type of person that he is, the type of car he has. He smokes cigarettes. He's very anal about the certain things that he does. The way that they shot this movie was absolutely amazing. It was beautiful.
And yeah. it's a foreign language film for those that haven't mm-hmm. seen it or aren't familiar with it. There have only been 11 foreign language movies to get a Best Picture nod. The last was Amour in 2012. Do we think a foreign language film can win up against this slate of nominees this year? Alaysia, you think it can win?
I'm not sure about it just yet. I think it's pushing its way through. They're definitely breaking down barriers, just like Black Panther. It's new things are coming. This is a new generation, and the doors are being opened. And once those doors are open, I feel like Roma and Black Panther, Black Klansman, these movies are pushing themselves in so that they can make way to eventually, you know, get to the point where, okay, we're ready to win these things. But right now, they're just kind of scratching the surface.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a surprise because of the path that leads to the Oscars. Lisa, this film had 10 nominations along the way. Well, it has 10 nominations in the Academy Awards, making it Netflix's biggest hit with the Academy. But it won 20 Best Film prizes in among regional groups and festivals across the nation. So people kind of saw this coming as it was racking up the prizes along the way, right?
Yes. And, I mean, what it's up against, you know, keep in mind, it's up against Bohemian Rhapsody, Black Panther, like we've already said, Black Klansman, like she mentioned, The Favorite, Green Book, Vice, A Star is Born. These are all big films, and they're also wide-ranging films. But Roma is just like the little film that could, mm-hmm. it feels like, and a lot of people are throwing, you know, their support behind it, and it's also nominated for Best Foreign Language Film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's got an opportunity to have two bites at the apple.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a wonderful film. I can't wait to dig into it a little deeper now that I've gotten my Star Trek viewing out of the way. But that's the thing I love about this wonderful quality content coming on a service like Netflix is I can watch it whenever I want. So it's not having to leave your house. It's not having to cough up an expensive evening out when you consider the price of a ticket and the drinks and all that stuff. So I think more and more people are going to be accessing content this way, quality content this way, because it meets and fits within our lifestyles. Up next is Black Klansman, the story of the first African-American in Colorado Springs, the first African-American officer who leads an investigation into the local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. It stars John David Washington and Adam Driver.
Hello.
This is Ron Stallworth calling.
Well, who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke.
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God.
Last time I checked. What can I do for him?
Well,
since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews.
Mexicans and Irish. Italians and Chinese. But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black rats.
So, you know, here's the thing about this movie. First of all, the first in this situation is it's Spike Lee's first nomination for Best Director after 30 years of being in the business, right? But that clip there demonstrates the level of, even though it's a very serious subject matter, the level of comedy that was in this movie that made it, it just created this roller coaster ride of emotions. Everything from laughter to anger to sadness. which is sort of a hallmark of the way Spike Lee makes movies. Did you see this movie, Lisa?
Oh, boy, did I. Not only did I see it, but I interviewed John David Washington, and we talked about the fact that it's actually his second Spike Lee film because he's the son of Denzel Washington. So he had a really small, teeny tiny part in Malcolm X.
Oh, wow.
He's the little boy. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that. But so that's a fun fact.
I did not know that.
Yeah, the film is so interesting to me because, like you said, it really evokes a lot of different emotions when you're watching it. The way Spike Lee directed it, he's trying to get across a message, but he's doing it in such a way that, you know, it's very subtle. It's also, you know, a movie about code switching because the character, you know, this man was able to infiltrate because he, quote unquote, sounded white over the phone. And I talked to John David a little bit about that. He had some very strong feelings about the whole concept of code switching that I won't get into. But I feel like, you know, this was the movie that Spike Lee should have been nominated for, and I'm really glad that he was. A lot of people feel like there are a lot of past projects that he should have been nominated for, but this one, again, was so exceptional and so timely with everything that's going on in this country and this way the country is really, you know, very, very divided. This was the right movie at the right time, again.
Yeah, it was. I just enjoyed it so much. It was first of all, beautifully shot movie for the type of movie it was. It, you know, didn't lend to big cinematic scenes and scenery, but it was Spike Lee always shoots a good movie. But the roller coaster ride was just very interesting for me because there were so many chuckle moments in the movie, and then I end up crying at the end, which was very emotional. And you know how Spike Lee likes to do at the end of movies, which is take you on this emotional ride, putting together these real life clips of events that have happened in our history that just bring out all the emotions. And so I was a little pissed at him at the end because of that, you know, I was like, well, you know, now I got to walk out of this theater, you know, with red eyes and wet cheeks. But it was a fantastic movie. And do we think, and not to take anything away from Spike's ability to make a film, do we think the magic touch of Jordan Peele had anything to do with this success?
I think so. And you know, and interestingly enough, you bring up Jordan Peele because this makes Spike one of six, I believe, black directors to be nominated. We had John Singleton, Lee Daniels for Precious. John Singleton was for Boys in the Hood. Lee Daniels for Precious. Steve McQueen for 12 Years a Slave. Barry Jenkins for Moonlight, and then Jordan Peele last year for Get Out. Interestingly enough, Spike is up against Alfonso Cuarón in this category. Alfonso won. He actually beat Steve McQueen back in 2014. He beat Steve didn't win for 12 Years a Slave because Alfonso won for Gravity. So it's interesting that we're having another, you know, this Mexican director up against an African-American director. And I think absolutely the Jordan Peele effect is going to be felt more and more in Hollywood because he's such an innovative and creative performer, not just as an actor, but also as a screenplay writer, a director, and a producer. But I think when it comes to Black Klansmen, it was such a provocative topic, and the way that Spike handled it was so well done. The inclusion of Jordan Peele to me just kind of felt like the cherry on top.
Yeah, it's who saw that coming from Key and Peele? Not me. I mean, I did not see this level of success and power in Jordan Peele's future. You mentioned the other six times or the other five times that Black filmmakers have been nominated for Best Director. Surprisingly, if he wins, he's going to be the first. So there's another first right there. After 91 Academy Awards and the number of years that Black filmmakers have been making movies, this will be the first if he is lucky enough to win. Now, he's got a lot of steep competition out there. Adam Driver is nominated as Best Supporting Actor. John David Washington, no nods, which I found kind of interesting because I think their performances were, if not on par, I thought John David Washington may have had a little better performance, and certainly it was more key and central to the storytelling. However, I guess it's a stacked list of people for best leading actor. Alaysia, what'd you think of his performance?
Actually, what's so crazy is I haven't seen Black Klansman.
You haven't seen Black.
I have not seen Black Klansman, and I feel terrible about
it. You are in for. Let me know. Don't feel you're in for a treat.
And I can't wait to see it. But what I can say is, from what I have seen and what I have heard, every time I'm on any type of social media platform or I'm on Netflix, Spike Lee promoted this movie.
Yeah.
I couldn't get enough of hearing the dun 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 mm-hmm. music every time I got on there. And I mean, it honestly draws you to go see that movie. And I feel like that had something else to do with why it was so successful. And then when people started to get the message and they were able to be cultivated by the humor, like you said, the emotions and everything, it really brought you into it. And I feel like he has a good chance. I think it's time for Spike Lee to have his chance.
There may be a reckoning in Hollywood for Spike Lee. The one of the things, Lisa, I don't know if you've seen it. I just found this to be one of the most just heartwarming occasions or viewings of social media. Have you seen the cell phone video clip of Spike watching the nominations be released?
No, I haven't. And, you know, I've got to check that out because Spike Lee, he's someone else that I've interviewed quite a few times over the years. And he's been very vocal about his disappointment at not having been nominated. So I know there was a lot of chatter around how heartwarming that clip was. So I got to watch it for myself.
Yeah, it was really. I don't know if it was his wife or someone else who was recording it, but he's standing there. He's listening. And when they announce him as being nominated, he jumps through the roof. I mean, the excitement. And I've been a fan since day one, since She's Gotta Have It. I've been one of Spike Lee's biggest fans. And so it was really heartwarming to see that moment. Enough talk of the sort of quality entertainment. Lisa, what's the gossip? So we know that Kevin Hart had to step down. And it's still being talked about. I know Tiffany Haddish has come to his defense and others have come to his defense. And I think he made some supportive comments around the attack on the star.
Jussie Smollett.
Yes.
The Empire actor.
So we can't let Kevin Hart go. What's going on here?
People are fascinated by Kevin Hart because, you know, if you support him or if you're one of his critics, he did not back down. He basically said, look, I made these, you know, homophobic jokes in the past that I would never tell now because, you know, the climate has changed. People really wanted him to step up and make this, like, full apology. And Kevin Hart maintained that he had already apologized. You know, initially he came off as very, like, look, you know, I've talked about this. I've talked about this in interviews. I've apologized. I'm not going to keep apologizing. So when he stepped down, I think a lot of people were surprised because what usually happens when celebrities get caught up in any type of controversy is they apologize. They just want to move forward. And Kevin Hart, he stood his ground. He was just kind of like, you know what? I'm not going to keep apologizing for the same thing. If you can't accept what I've already said in the past, then that's on you. So what kept it going, I think, is what you said about the support. You know, Ellen DeGeneres, who's a member herself of the LGBTQ community, who's very upset at Kevin Hart, stepped up to say, you know what, I called the Academy, and I think you should be hosting the show. But at this point, you know, Kevin Hart has said that he feels like if he were to try to come back and host, it would just be a distraction. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, in my heart of hearts, I feel like Kevin Hart just feels like he just doesn't want to be bothered with it anymore, that he's a huge star already. Right. And yes, hosting the Academy Awards would be a great coup for him. But at the same time, I think he may, I don't want to speak for Kevin Hart, but the sense that I got among some of his hardcore supporters and fans has been that Kevin Hart doesn't really need the Academy Awards. You know, he's already a huge star. He sells out for his concerts. His movies usually do fairly well. So, you know, he just, you know, really kind of doesn't even really need the headache if he doesn't want it.
Right. So who are we stuck with? I mean, who's hosting now?
Nobody as of yet.
Really?
That's the thing. And what's gonna happen? You know, what is going to happen if the Academy Awards does not have a host?
Wow.
You know, the thing about the Oscars is it's the last award show of the season. So by the time you get to it, there's a little bit of fatigue. You know, we've already seen the Golden Globes where people are drinking and having a great time and more apt to get up there to say whatever. You know, you've already had the Grammys and things like that. So you kind of need something special, even though it's one of Hollywood's biggest nights and it's certainly the movie industry's biggest night. You kind of need something that's going to set you apart. And I think we see that in the fact that the ratings have not been the greatest over the past couple years. And also keep in mind that these days award shows are competing with social media.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the stuff that we used to get super excited about when it came to award shows that you ran to watch on your television, people have already been talking about for weeks and months
right.
on social media. So it just feels a little dated.
Yeah, it's, you know, this. I know we're in a bit of a PC culture, and I generally think it's a good thing. But, man, if I had to go back and apologize for everything I've done in my life, and I've done some terrible things. And I've said some terrible stuff. I mean, if you have to keep going back for that, I mean, I think what matters is what you're doing now and how you represent yourself and how you treat people now. I think having made the apology, we should have accepted it and moved on. He should be hosting. We should be having a good time. But I think you're right.
I think we're in an era of backlash against the backlash.
Yes.
I can't say that I definitely think you're right that Kevin Hart should host, but I think we're absolutely in an era where people are feeling like here's one more thing that I'm supposed to be outraged about, and maybe I'm going to let this one go.
Okay.
You know, there's so much other things in the world that people feel like they're supposed to be outraged and angered about. And for some people, they just could not work it up to be so outraged about this particular controversy.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we let you go, let me get a prediction from you on best film and what are you looking forward to? What category are you looking forward to most?
So my heart wants to say best film, A Star Is Born, because it's such a great film and so many people love it. So many people love the soundtrack. But I feel like Green Book is going to win, which
wow.
disappoints me because it's not a film that I loved, but I feel like it's a film that Hollywood loves
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. The reason, my personal opinion is Hollywood loves something that feels like a Driving Miss Daisy type of situation. It's been, you know, a controversial film, but there were some strong performances in it, and I feel like it's got a lot of momentum going into the Academy Awards, which does not make me happy. I'll say it like that. It doesn't thrill me. I was not a huge fan of Green Book, but I get why people enjoy it. I also get why people have been very critical of it, including the person at the film whose life the film is based on. His family has been extremely critical
oh, wow.
of the project. So yeah, I have to say that if I was going to predict a winner, and I could be wrong, but I'm predicting Green Book.
Alaysia.
I'm going for Black Panther.
Are you really?
I'm going for Black Panther.
What makes you think it's going to win?
Even, you know,
I mean,
honestly,
you want it to win, but what film do you think is going to win?
Ooh, I'll have to say, I'm going to have to go with Green Book. I think it's just the, you know, the culture in me that wants to say Black Panther, so I'm going to go for that. But, you know, honestly, the production side and everything of Green Book, it was a loved movie. Just simply how everyone reacted to it, and, you know, overall, it was a great movie.
I think I'm going to say, because I think the most talked about film, the two top most, I think, talked about film is Roma and The Favorite. I think The Favorite is getting all the accolades. I haven't seen it, but I've seen the trailer, and it's one of those things that it's not my kind of movie. It's not the kind of thing I would spend dollars to go see at the theater. It's the kind of thing I'd wait for it to come on cable. But when I watch the trailer, it's like, I got to see this movie. It just looks wonderfully fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think The Favorite might be the one that gets it. Hey, look, guys, I want to thank.
Oh,
go ahead. Go ahead, Lisa.
I was going to say that because we said all that, of course, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Well, that's,
oh,
and
yeah.
Now you talked about scale, That movie has a tremendous scale. I mean, you're talking a huge, sort of larger in life character in Freddie Mercury, the movie. I think you're right. I think it does have the kind of thing that blows people away, and it may be a dark horse. It may be a dark horse.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us again, Lisa. Really appreciate you being here to chat with us.
Thank you. It was a great time. I had so much fun.
And thank you, Alaysia, for sitting in on this one.
Thank you so much. So much appreciated.
To keep up on what Lisa is writing about these days, you can visit her profile page at CNN.com. That's going to do it for another episode of Pop Life. Let us know what films you favored in 2018. You can leave comments at the Pop Life Facebook page at Pop Life WAER. I'm Joe Lee. Maybe the night that my tears might let me know all the stars are blue.